from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll preview an exhibit of paintings all created in Indiana State Parks.
I'll talk with actor Ron Keaton, who portrays Winston Churchill in a one-man show coming to Indy this weekend.
And I'll talk with artist Gautam Rao about the many projects he's taken on this spring and summer, and we'll have that Arts Calendar Week haul.
What'll we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Indiana has a stellar collection of state parks and recreational areas, a fact that was not lost on Richmond Art Museum director Sean Dingworth and plein air painter Rick Wilson. More than 2 years ago, they conceived of the idea of an exhibition featuring paintings created in all of the parks. Sharon Gamble invited Sean and Rick to our studios to learn about this official bicentennial project.
So, Sean or Rick, where did the idea for this show come from? Rick, was this your baby?
It was. Actually, I've been thinking about painting the state parks for a number of years, and being an artist, we procrastinate. And
what? I'm shocked to hear this.
I know. But as it turned out, the timing was perfect. So back in December of 2013, Sean and I were having a conversation, just chatting, and I had brought up the idea of painting the parks and maybe putting the exhibition off for a couple of years so that it would in line with the Indiana Bicentennial.
Sure.
Sean expressed that he loved the idea and asked that I send in a written proposal to the Richmond Art Museum, for which I did. The next month, Sean submitted it to the board.
And the board said,
yes.
Wow, what a great idea, right?
Yeah, terrific idea because, at the Richmond Art Museum, we're very proud of the rich Indiana history and legacy of landscape painting, and we thought this fit perfectly with our mission to give Indiana artists an opportunity to exhibit their works. And what a great way to celebrate not only the bicentennial, but the centennial of the Indiana State Park System.
Yeah. And the state parks, there are a lot of them. There are?
There are 24 state parks. Mm-hmm. There are also a number of state recreation areas and fish and wildlife areas. I did include some of those fish and wildlife areas and state recreation areas in the paintings. I did 70 paintings over a two-year period. I wanted 2 years of painting time. So that I could capture, have a couple of chances to capture the seasons.
Sure. So, and did you try to capture all four seasons in this in this show?
Mm-hmm.
Are you a fast painter?
Yeah, I'm a plein air painter. Mm-hmm. Plein air is a French term for painting outdoors in plein air. So I do like to paint from life. And so in doing so, you learn the technique of painting in plein air. Because your light source is always moving, which is the sun. So you learn to, capture those shadows and lay in those dark areas first and then layer in the medium and lighter values over that. So,
do you ever find you need to, take a photograph and finish something up in the studio, or are you pretty pure about trying to do it all outdoors?
I'm not the purist. I do use photography, and even to the point that I use Photoshop to adjust the photographs. I may take two or three photographs because I know how cameras work. They will average out the values of a scene. The lights will be overexposed. The darks will be underexposed. So when I take photographs, I will take pictures of the sky, a general overall view, take a picture of the shadowed areas. Then I'll pull those together in Photoshop so that I've got as close to what I saw in real life as what I can get.
You made an approximation of reality.
Yeah.
You got interested in art before you were a teenager or when you were a teenager?
Yeah, I think I did my first painting somewhere around 13 or 14 years old.
What got you started?
I'd always had an interest in art, even long before that, 7, 8 years old. I always enjoyed art.
Did somebody in your family take you to museums? No.
Just when I would see prints or I never saw paintings that early because we never went to museums. But anytime I'd see a print in a store or something, I would gravitate to it and just stand and stare at it.
Wow.
And I'm from a musical family, and my dad played music. So I did learn how to play guitar at an early age, I think 9 years old. And so I was born with an artistic mind, I guess, if you will.
I'm curious about that since you have a foot in two camps, in music and in visual art. Do you feel as though there are skill sets that transfer among different art forms?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it all stems back to a creative mind. And, music, just another form of art. And so it just, I appreciate art from art forms of all kinds. Mm-hmm. So, music, visual arts, I appreciate it all.
And then you went into something else for a career, although tell us about your career. I read a little bit about it and I had the sense that there might be some artistic aspects to what you did for a living before you retired a little bit early.
Well, somewhat. I mean, I never really considered art as a profession, mm-hmm. Just mainly because I wasn't exposed to that opportunity.
Sure.
So I went into the corporate world working for, a major corporation and worked my way up from basically the, factory worker into the office where I worked in the engineering department doing bills of material takeoffs and eventually into a more of a, drafting, using AutoCAD drafting software to figure out hardware, door hardware kind of configurations and such. So, and to this day, I still do, on the side, I still do house plans and those sort of things.
Sure. And while that may not be the same as going out and going to Shade State Park and painting a beautiful stream, it's still dealing with gradations lot of details, right?
What the artistic side that it brings to that is the ability to see in 3D, and be able to understand the perspectives and the depth of what you're drawing, on a two-dimensional surface. You understand what happens in the third dimension.
Which most of us are walking around without that ability to do.
True.
Yeah. How does Rick's style fit into the continuum of Indiana art, Sean?
That's a great question. I think Rick is unique in his style, and I think one of the things that appeals to collectors and to the art museum is Rick sort of carries forward that tradition of the Hudson River style of painting. And I think Rick's style is distinctive and unique. I think his use of light is amazing in the way he sees nature, and you'll be able to see that in this terrific exhibition.
Tell us a little bit about, and this is a question for both of you. You were influenced by the Hudson River School, the Barbizon School, and also 18th and 19th century Dutch painting, and by the Luminists. I want to know more about the Luminists.
Well, the Luminists are basically the Hudson River and the Barbizon period painters. They painted in kind of a romanticism kind of look. They enhanced their work with beautiful sunrise and sunsets. Their skies are very luminous. So it's really kind of another name for those two schools.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as far as style goes, Hudson River, I love Hudson River. But the style actually probably falls a little closer to the Barbizon period, which is a precursor to Impressionism.
Mm-hmm. And you're fascinated by light. I that's probably a dumb statement. Every painter is fascinated by light, right?
True, but, true. That is true.
So in your two-year journeys around the state, if you painted a particular state park twice, were you trying to paint at different times of day as well as different seasons?
Well, obviously I wanted to explore all four seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as a time of day or such, not really. I mean, just looking at the light that's available at that moment. And so just working with what's available.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What and this is, again, a question for both of you. Sean, you are, is it fifth generation in eastern Indiana? You have deep, deep roots here. And Rick, you were born in Edinburgh, and mm-hmm. have you stayed in Indiana your whole life?
Yes, yeah.
So you guys know our state, but mm-hmm. I have the sense that in the process of painting these paintings or seeing these paintings, you've learned some new things about our state.
That was one of the reasons why I wanted to do this. My wife and I both love going to state parks and camping and experiencing the trails and such, but we hadn't visited all of them. And that was a goal of ours, was to visit all of the parks. And so by doing this project, it forced the issue of having to visit all of the state parks. And each one is beautiful in its own right.
I think one of the great things Rick did was he included people in the park. So people participating in the parks, enjoying the parks, which I think brings a real sense of what's happening today and how nature and the environment is very important. And we hope that what this project will do is not only bring people to the museum and see the art, but also to explore our state parks, which is an incredible resource that our state has. And the fact that the state started the park system 100 years ago was extremely progressive, and many states followed the example that the state of Indiana had set when they did that.
That's right, because we don't think about this unless we have grandparents or great-grandparents or just love to read about history. But a century ago, it was all about manufacturing. It was largely mm-hmm. about how do we mass produce more stuff, mm-hmm. and the being forward thinking enough to set aside green space is a gift our ancestors gave us that we can never really fully thank them for except by honoring it this way.
Well, we have a lot to thank Colonel Richard Lieber mm-hmm. for, and his vision of starting the state parks, or lobbying to start the state parks. Obviously, the first state park was McCormick's Creek, and then, of course, Turkey Run and such. But, it was a great vision on his part to see where we were going in the industrial age, and realizing that if we don't set aside some green space, that, man will continue to perpetuate its ways, and it will all be gone.
There'll be nothing, yeah. Do we know, Sean, I bet in the process of researching this to put it before your board and make it affiliated with the Bicentennial, has anybody else tried to document all the state parks with an art project? Has anybody photographed all of them? Or I don't recall ever hearing about a similar project.
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, we weren't aware of that. If it had occurred, maybe someone did that as a project on their own. Mm-hmm. But in regards to an exhibition that'll be traveling, we're certainly not aware of that.
Now, I know that there was a lady, Glory June Grief, mm-hmm. Has published a book on all of Indiana State Parks that was published, I think, back in 2008. A book was something that I was kind of hoping to put together for this that included dialogue about the history of each park. But mm-hmm. since this book was already published, we didn't want to duplicate Glory June's efforts on that.
Sure.
So, but there will be a catalog of the exhibition.
Excellent. And now I'm going to ask a dangerous question. Coming out of this project, do you have a favorite state park?
Mm-hmm. Well, they all have their unique beauty, of course.
Sure.
A lot of the state parks are about the lakes and fishing and such. I'm not a fisherman, so those don't quite have the appeal to me. But, yeah, I think a couple of my favorite state parks would have to be Springmill? Springmill State Parks, because of the Pioneer Village there. It just really takes us back to, you know, when Indiana was new. And then also Turkey Run and Shades State Parks, walking through the canyons there, it just leaves you with a feeling of awe and is this Indiana kind of feeling.
Sharon Gamble with Richmond Art Museum Director Sean Dingworth and plein air painter Rick Wilson. Rick's 70 paintings of the flora and fauna of our state parks and reservoirs is on view now through July 16th at the Richmond Art Museum. You can learn more at richmondartmuseum.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Originally from Indiana, actor Ron Keaton has been working in Chicago for a number of years, but his one-man show about Winston Churchill will bring him back home this weekend. Travis DiNicola spoke with Ron about his new play, Churchill.
Ronald, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
It's a real pleasure. I am really interested in this one-man show on Churchill that you've been doing in Chicago, New York. Great reviews, won some awards. Now you're bringing it here. Let's start with, tell me a bit about how you decided to want to do a Churchill play.
Well, honestly, the flippant answer is I needed a job.
Mm-hmm.
But to the point.
That's where it usually starts with actors.
Well, yeah. We all go through those times where we need to find a way to create our own work. I have always had an abiding interest in history, mm-hmm. particularly American history. And I wanted a unique viewpoint on that history. This is all, I don't mean for this to sound self-serving, but quite frankly, Churchill and I had some physical characteristics that were similar.
Mm-hmm. That
you
works.
Know? Mm-hmm. I'm not 250 pounds, but my hair, as you can see, is jumped out of my head. He was very articulate and wrote all his own speeches pretty much. You know, me being a playwright, I do a lot of writing. I have some affinity with that.
Mm-hmm.
But frankly, I saw a special on Churchill what used to be, is it Channel 59? What's the PBS station?
Here it's 20.
20,
so yeah,
20,
yeah.
20.
There we go.
I'm confusing
sure.
59 with something else. I saw a special in June of 1986 mm-hmm. about Churchill, and I was so taken by it that on another broadcast, I actually recorded it on old VHS tape
mm-hmm.
and had it with me all these years from the time I moved to Chicago in the mid-'80s. Back in 2012... or so, I had this box of old tapes. I opened it up, pulled this one out, found a machine, played it, and realized why I was so attracted to it.
Hmm.
The man is fascinating.
Yeah.
He's endlessly innovative in the way he looks at things while being such a traditionalist. Churchill was a Victorian man caught in a modern age. And so he couldn't always apply the tenets from his youth to what challenges were thrown at him during World War II. So he literally had to be creative in talking about military strategy with other generals.
Mm-hmm.
Most folks don't know that he was the head of the committee in England that actually invented the tank.
Hmm.
So he has that credit to his resume, and his writing is endless. It's prodigious. It's almost Shakespearean in tone. Yeah, he uses a lot of words.
Mm-hmm.
The more formal writing style in those years dictated that for every three words you and I say to make a point, he would write 10. But he was a best-selling author,
mm-hmm.
and he knew exactly what he was saying when he was going to say it.
You know, I obviously, most of us know Churchill as the leader of England during World War II, but I think there's a lot of history that Americans may forget. Churchill's roles prior to World War II, but even afterwards, the fact that he wasn't reelected and sort
exactly.
of his time, you know, after World War II, which is a part that I think gets forgotten quite a lot.
And that is the exact point at which our play begins.
At the point where he wasn't
reelected. At the point
reelected.
Where, you know, he had been invited to America
mm-hmm.
By Truman to make a speech in Fulton, Missouri. This was, you know, he'd come with his tail between his legs because 6 months earlier he'd just been defeated for re-election.
That part is amazing.
It's fascinating,
to me.
It's
like, how could Churchill, of all people, lose an election? And I can't even imagine how, you know, bitter he must have felt afterwards.
Travis, I think the reason why he lost, and this is just my own opinion, I think the reason why he lost is because Britain was just done with the war.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the chief reminder of that war. I think the people, rightly or wrongly, decided that they wanted such a radical change that it caught Churchill totally off guard.
Yeah.
He suffered from depression at various times in his life. And this particular time after the war, I want to say it was the election was in July of 45. So the war in the Pacific was still going on.
Mm-hmm.
And he was defeated. He went back to his estate and did not come out of hiding for weeks.
Hmm.
He was so surprised by and he ran a strong, forceful campaign for re-election. He was just put in a place that he didn't bargain for, so he had to regroup, just like we all do when we get put in places we didn't bargain for.
So it was really a benefit that he was invited to the United States to talk.
It was not only a benefit, it re-energized him.
Yeah.
It made him a player on the international stage again. This was the famous speech where he coined the phrase Iron Curtain. Most folks forget that nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, he very slowly established himself back into the British political arena and became prime minister again in 1950.
So how is your production staged? Is it, I mean, obviously it's a monologue, but is it him reminiscing? Is it him giving a speech? I mean, how do you get all this into?
He's reminiscing to theoretically a small group of people.
Yeah.
People that have been invited to hear him speak. And this is after the big speech in Fulton.
Okay.
Yes, he does a lot of reminiscing. He talks about his life right up until that point in his life in 1946. There are stories galore about his childhood, about his relationship with his parents, military school experiences, and even becoming a war correspondent.
Mm.
He had quite a varied resume, and most of that resume was built in the late 1800s, 1890 to almost the time when World War I began in 1914. And by the time World War I began, he had already been elected to office, held a cabinet position, written three bestsellers. I could go on and on and on here. That's the kind of accomplished man he was before he was 40 years old.
That's just amazing. What can we learn from Churchill today? I mean, what are audiences, your audiences, getting out of this production?
That depends on the audience, to be perfectly honest. I was surprised and continue to be surprised by the fact that for whatever their reasons are, Churchill has appealed to a large demographic. When we first produced the show in Chicago in the fall of 2014, as you might imagine, it was the folks who were older, who had mm-hmm. their parents tell them stories about Churchill, who had some identification with him, mm-hmm. who came to see the show. When we took the show to New York in February 2015, kids came out of the woodwork. Hmm. You could see whole families where grandpa talks about Churchill and he passed it down to his father, who then passes it down to the grandson.
Yeah.
And these are all, you know, this is groups of 6 and 8 and 10 people. It was utterly fascinating to watch. I'm glad they came.
Mm-hmm.
But it also was a surprise that none of us on production ever really expected.
You had a special guest at one of those performances, Churchill's granddaughter.
Yes. I can even tell you the date. It was May 19th last year.
Now, did you know before the performance?
I did not.
That's probably a good thing.
I did not. The production folks did at the theater we were working at, New World Stages in New York. But they didn't tell me until half hour.
Yeah.
And so then when I go out on stage and I begin my work, she is sitting smack in the middle of the bottom section with this shock of red hair, and enjoyed the performance immensely because I was able to meet her afterwards. By the way, her name is Edwina Sandys. She's a highly respected artist and sculptor in her own right. She's in her early 70s now. Very articulate, very properly British, mm-hmm. but very cosmopolitan because she now lives in New York.
Hmm.
Anyway, I thanked her for coming. She said, well, you must understand, I did have certain reservations. I do understand that, ma'am. I hope I didn't disappoint you too much. He said, no, you surpassed all of them. But I must tell you, my grandfather hated blue. At the time, I had a blue three-piece suit.
Uh-huh.
And I said, oh, well, so then he would not have selected this suit.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, no, this is a perfectly lovely suit. But you see, he would not have liked it because mm-hmm. he simply hated blue.
How funny.
And so I made a promise.
I'm guessing you
no longer wear blue. To the Churchill family to change the suit.
Uh-huh.
And you'll see the new suit.
Okay.
In performance out at Warren.
Excellent. I was wondering if you had changed the suit. Sounds like a good call on that.
Well, you had to. You know, when the family says, he wouldn't like that.
That's so funny. Wonder why I hated blue. So you'll be performing this at the Warren Performing Arts Center and doing 3 performances?
Yep.
That's great.
June 3rd, 4th, and 5th. The 3rd and 4th are at 7:30. The afternoon matinee on the 5th is at 2:30.
Mm-hmm.
Tickets are available at itickets.com still.
And proceeds from this go to support TCM Student Scholarships?
Yes.
Tell me a bit about that.
TCM Student Scholarships. TCM, by the way, is run by David Wright, who is an old friend of mine from way back. And the scholarships are aids mm-hmm. For students. I'm assuming for missionary work mm-hmm. and studies abroad and on and on and on. And let me tell you, not only are they helping the students extend their reach, they've been really good to me in putting this show up for everybody. So
good. Good work all around.
Yes.
Well, Ronald, thank you very much for coming into Art of the Matter. Pleasure to chat with you.
I deeply
appreciate it. To learn more about Churchill and looking forward to the performance.
I hope you come.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Travis DiNicola with actor Ron Keaton. You can see his play Churchill at the Warren Performing Arts Center this weekend, Friday and Saturday at 7:30 and Sunday at 2:30. More information is available at churchilltheplay.com, churchilltheplay.com. You can purchase tickets at itickets.com, and if you enter the code word Tony, you'll get a discount. Again, go to itickets.com, enter the code word Tony, and you'll get a discount. ¶¶ Hey, Travis?
Yes, Sharon?
You know what season it is?
It's finally summer.
Finally summer. It's birthday month for the
yes,
Art of the
is.
Matters co-host.
Yes, yes, yes. You and
one
I both
early,
have
one
birthdays
late.
Coming up very soon. Mm-hmm,
it's mm-hmm. also garden tour and home
Ooh,
tour
that's
season.
Yes.
Indeed. And we'll tell you about some of those on our calendar that we call
What'll
We Do? Summer Edition.
Looking forward to that. Hey, the Asante Children's Theater of Indianapolis is wrapping up 26 seasons with Genius to the Beat of Soul.
Wow.
Written by Deborah Asante and directed by Jeffrey Page. Genius to the Beat Soul is a musical journey of a young girl who wishes for genius while struggling to stand up to the bullies and roadblocks in her life. It features a blended cast of 23 youth and adult singers, dancers, and actors. And it is rated PG, but PG-13s, but good for older kids. And it's going to run 2 weekends at the Indianapolis Repertory Theater from Friday, June 10th through Sunday, June 19th. Should be a great show worth checking out. You can get more information at the irtlive.com website for Asante Children's Theater.
Fantastic. Hey, if you've been driving at all in the Meridian Kessler neighborhood, you've probably seen banners and yard signs for the Meridian Kessler Home and Garden Tour, which is the longest-running home tour in Indiana. It starts on June 3rd with a twilight party. That's this Friday, June 3rd, and the opportunity to see homes. And it continues on June 4th and 5th, so all weekend, 8 additional homes in this lovely historic neighborhood. Learn more at hometour.mkna.org. That MKNA is for Meridian Kessler Neighborhood Association, to help you remember it. So hometour.mkna.org all this weekend.
Very cool. Hey, just a reminder, Indie Magic Monthly is having their monthly magic show next week, Tuesday, June 7th, 7:30 at Theater on the Square. And for June, it is their Young Whippersnappers a magic show featuring all younger
you like
magicians.
To say
I just
that
love
too
saying
much.
Whippersnappers. Trig Watson, amongst many other great young magicians, will be performing at that Whippersnappers of Magic show, Indie Magic Monthly, Tuesday the 7th, 7:30, Theater on the Square.
Martha and Grant, where does Whippersnapper come from? Can we do cross promotion here with Away with Words?
Yeah.
Hey, Garden Tour this coming Wednesday, June 8th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The Indianapolis Garden Club is doing its annual garden walk. You can find out more at igcgardenwalk.com, igcgardenwalk.com. There is an optional luncheon, but grab your ticket soon. The luncheon's at Woodstock Club, and the gardens are at various places. After you get your ticket, you will get the guide, and you'll know where you're going on that garden tour.
If you are a dance choreographer and been wanting to choreograph some modern dance and looking for just the right venue, Modus is interested. They're calling all choreographers. They are doing their biennial concert, Cultivate, where they are looking for new choreographers to share their work with Modus. It is an adjudicated showcase. There are prizes. Applications are due by June 29th. And then the shows will be in November. To get more information, go to Modus's website, modusdance.com.
My last item is 19 Stars of Indiana Art, a bicentennial celebration. Yet another fabulous bicentennial celebration. This one at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. Artists from then through now arranged in not in chronological chronological order, but thematically, with themes such as pioneers and innovators, or nature lovers, or teachers and trainers. Find out more about that at the Indianapolis Museum of Art. Runs through January 8th, so you have a little bit of time on that.
There are some really cool concerts coming up in the near future, Sharon. Melissa Etheridge is going to be playing a solo show at the Palladium. Culture Club is coming to Clues Hall July 25th. That should be a hoot. And tickets are on sale now for Lorena McKenna at Clues in November as
Fantastic.
Well. Some great, great shows coming up very soon.
Love it. So many things you can see and do. We are actually out of time. Don't forget you can learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide. The Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide. And, of course, you can learn more when you listen to our calendar next week. It's that calendar we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Gautam Rao has been teaching art and design at Butler University for a dozen years. School's out for the summer, but Gautam's busier than ever. Sharon Gamble invited this multimedia artist to talk about his work at the IMA's Art Design Mini Golf Course, the Welcome Race Fan Sign Project, and the new Installation Nation exhibit at the Indianapolis Arts Center.
So before we get into the fact that you've been in the studio producing work 23 out of every 24 hours lately, apparently, let's talk about what led you to visual art in the first place.
Well, I had an amazing sort of transformative teacher in high school. His name was Walter Bartman in Maryland, where I grew up. And, I mean, he was an amazing high school art teacher. And he sort of influenced me to go into art and to go into teaching as well.
Well, the fact that you were in an art class in the beginning means that there was something. You had some talent. You had some direction towards visual art.
Well, I think I just had something to say, and I was looking for a medium to say it through. And the visual art kind of seemed to be that medium that I gravitated to.
Anybody in your else in your family an artist?
No, not really.
Did your parents encourage you in art?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, my dad passed away when I was four. So my mother raised me and was enormously supportive, and still is.
That's great. That's great. So. Visual art is a big field. You know, there's so many different tools you can use in visual art. What were you attracted to first? Was it drawing or painting or sculpting?
It really was painting. I mean, I think in the early days, I thought of myself as a painter, and I wanted to be a painter. All of the artists that I was looking at, people like Lucian Freud, those are sort of the people I aspired to. And so, early on, that's sort of what I saw myself as.
Mm-hmm.
But I think over time, that's really broadened.
How? What caused that?
Well, I think I'm going to say it was probably graduate school. I think people say graduate school for art that you're supposed to come out of it different than you went in.
Really?
Yeah. I mean that.
Wow.
People say that. I mean, that's basically the goal, is to have a transformative experience.
That's kind of scary, though, on the front end.
I think that's true. I think most people who go through the experience are pretty scared.
Where did you do your undergraduate work, and how did you decide where you wanted to go to graduate school then?
It was actually quite easy. I did my undergraduate work at Boston University.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a teacher there, his name was John Moore, who was someone, a painter, someone I really wanted to study with. And, after the 2 years that I was there, I did my last 2 years there. He moved to the University of Pennsylvania to teach at the graduate school. And so that pretty much made my graduate school choice for me.
Mm-hmm. So you went in, you were still thinking of yourself as fundamentally as a painter when you started.
That's right.
Graduate school.
Yes, that's
and
right.
Your curriculum made you explore other areas, obviously.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, one of the things that I was doing that I really didn't expect to be doing was like large-scale darkroom photography. And so, you know, I found myself, you know, it was really old school. We had, you know, like very large tubs of photochemicals, mm-hmm. and I was doing prints that were like 5 feet by like 2.5 feet.
Oh my gosh!
Which in the old days, you know, with sort of wet darkroom photography, it really was a challenge. The enlargers, usually the enlarger is like vertically, and you project the image, you know, downward. But for that scale, the enlargers had to be rotated, and the paper was on the wall.
Whoa!
And so it was quite elaborate, and you know, I realized that that could be exciting too.
Yeah.
So,
well, was there any course of study in through art school or graduate school that you said, "Oh, now I know I never want to do that"?
Well, I think, you know, to be honest, you know, as an undergraduate student, I think that thing was. I think there were lots of things that were like that. There was. I think abstract art, you know, when I was starting out, I didn't understand it. And because I didn't understand it, I sort of like didn't like it.
Sure.
And graphic design too, same thing. I didn't like it and I didn't understand it. And I think, now those are some of the things that I'm most passionate about, graphic design and abstract art. And so I've learned my lesson to say whenever I say, I don't like this. I'm probably going to end up being passionate about that in a year or two.
Wow, that's a life lesson, not just a hands-on art lesson.
That's true.
To listen carefully to what you don't like. So do you have a studio? Do you use your studio at Butler, or do you have a studio elsewhere, or where do you create most of your art?
I have a studio at home, and so I do like my painting in that studio, and then if I'm building sculpture, that's in our garage.
Mm-hmm. What is your – do you have – as we're having this conversation a couple weeks before it airs, school – Butler's out. You've turned in your grades. You're quote-unquote free a little bit for the summer. Do you have strict rules about how you create, or like do you have a practice of always being in your studio X number of hours of every day, or is it something different than that?
No, I think that's pretty close to it. I mean, I would think of it as a full-time job.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I'm definitely in the studio every day. And I think one of the things I feel fortunate about is having a variety of different mediums to work in. And so if I get stuck in a particular medium, I can kind of switch up and find another avenue to work in.
Oh, that's a really bright side of the coin of not just having one medium. Yeah. So I want you to tell us how you got involved in helping to create the crazy mini golf course at the IMA. How did you get pulled into that project?
Well, I think it's kind of a good story. To be honest, like 2 or 3 years ago, for a long time, I've wanted to build a piece of art that was also a mini golf hole.
Huh.
I think of my work as very playful and interactive.
Yeah.
And I think mini golf is kind of, you know, a perfect medium. It's, you know, it's kind of relatively small and still fun and interactive. And so it really was a kind of a long-term goal of mine to do this. And I had noticed, you know, places around the country where they were doing sort of artist design mini golf. And so this was just a long-term desire to kind of do that. And so they basically, you know, the IMA put a call out for artists to sort of apply for it. And so, you know, I was basically all over it.
Can you describe to it for people who haven't had the pleasure of going out to play yet? Can you describe your part of the course?
Yeah, absolutely. So I designed the 15th hole. It's a par 2, and all of the holes at the IMA mini golf are inspired by the Indiana Bicentennial, and so each hole tells a particular story of Indiana. And so the kind of element that I wanted to highlight was kind of the woodlands of Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, people outside the state, you know, were thought of as fly high over country and
just, you know, cornfields,
corn and soy. Exactly. And so I wanted to say that there's more. I go hiking very frequently, and I know lots of people do, and you just get the sense that it's a message that should be out there. So my piece kind of highlights the woodlands of Indiana, and also the tulip poplar, which is the state tree of Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful tree. For something else that we're famous for, though, the Indy 500 race, you designed one of the Welcome Race Fans signs. Tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's been such a fantastic project. So 33 artists were selected, and the artworks kind of have to had to incorporate the text, Welcome Race Fans. And I think there's this great tradition of having these banners around town every year where it says Welcome Race Fans. And so this year, the Arts Council of Indianapolis decided to commission artists to kind of make the banners into artwork. And so, I mean, having seen all 33, I mean, they're really fantastic. They're all so different.
Some are metal, some are wood, some are felted wool.
Absolutely. Yeah. The media, there's just a wide variety of media. And so that was really exciting. And it was kind of each of these projects has its own sort of challenges.
Yeah.
And so that one, to incorporate the text in a way that's really kind of artistic, was kind of a challenge.
What did you start with? Just the concept of welcoming, or did you start thinking about races and race cars, or where did you start?
Well, I think, honestly, I was sort of thinking about the text itself. So, you know, it was Welcome Race Fans, and I kind of saw it as two different phrases. And so my piece, basically, like, our twins, they turned 1 year old 2 days ago, so May 16th. And so, you know, I kind of knew that they would be turning one right around the race time. And so, and, you know, they're a boy and a girl, and it was like two different phrases, Welcome and Race Fans. And so, I really had this idea that, you know, one of them would have a t-shirt that said Welcome, and the other one would have a t-shirt that says Race Fans. And they would be sort of welcoming the race fans to Indy.
They're the embodiment.
Yeah, that's right.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you.
How fun. I don't know how you've had time to create all this art. Just discipline, good self-discipline.
That's right. And, you know, my wife is very, very supportive as well.
Yeah, that helps. And you have an Installation Nation piece. Tell us about that.
So that piece it's a sculptural piece. It's called Water Tables, and there are 16 sort of reflective blue mirror finish surface, sort of amorphous shapes. And they're essentially in the form of tables. And so they'll be installed outdoors this summer at the Indianapolis Art Center, and they kind of form. They form a grouping of tables. They are meant to kind of talk about water pollution. They will be the spot that they're installed. They will be installed at the Art Center is right by the river, and so there'll be this kind of really nice congruence with the spot that they're in as well.
What are your primary inspirations when you create art?
I think, you know. I think that's a tough question.
You clearly love nature.
Yeah,
and you've grown up back east, but you've certainly settled into Indiana well.
That's true. I mean, I think one of the things that sort of inspires me is sort of abstract form in some ways. These days, I find myself really thinking about ways of making interesting sculpture, making pieces that can be seen differently from all different angles and all different sides. And I think the other thing, I really like to think of my work as playful, as fun, and as interactive. And so those kinds of elements, I think, really inspire me. And I think one of the things I've found is when I put my art in public and, you know, people play it or people interact with it, I get lots and lots of feedback from that. I mean, I think one of the real pleasures for me is to kind of, you know, like the mini golf, for example, is to just kind of go there and kind of watch people play it and sort of interact with it. And, you know, you start to say, oh, you know, maybe I could, for the next project, I can kind of tweak this or change that. So the feedback of people interacting with the artwork, I think, is a huge inspiration.
That also leads me to the question, how do you know when a work is done?
Well, I think these days I'm finding that I just kind of like to put my art out there. And I think usually the ideas change afterwards anyway. And mm-hmm. So one thing kind of leads to another. And I think, you know, they're usually these things have deadlines. And so
it's done when it has to be turned in.
That's right.
Sharon Gamble with artist Gautam Rao. Learn more at gautamrao.net, and that is spelled GAUTAMRAO.net. Again, GAUTAMRAO.net.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owls Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. when I'll preview this year's Early Music Festival.
I'll get a bit of a preview and a conversation with Janet Allen about her 20 years at the Indiana Repertory Theater.
And I'll take a look at Indiana in 200 Objects at the State Museum. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.